Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles, über alles in der Welt. Wenn es gilt zum Schutz und Trotze, brüderlich zusammenhält. Von der Maas bis an die Himmel, von der Esch bis an den Welt. Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles, über alles in der Welt. Deutschland, Deutschland,
hello, listeners. This is Carolyn Yeager, bringing you the 10th installment of my reading of the Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau, 1939 to 1945, a book written by Alfred de Zayas from the surviving files of this bureau. I will be reading chapters 17, 18, and 19 in this installment. These chapters cover the brutal killing of 160 hospitalized German troops in Feodosia. The massacre of 596 at Gneshino by Soviet soldiers, a number that included women in the roles of nurses and communications personnel, and Soviet crimes against non-Germans, specifically Spanish and Italian soldiers and Baltic and Ukrainian civilians. There are some very gruesome accounts in these three chapters, and these chapters have no subheadings as the previous ones did, since they are relatively short. Chapter 17 is titled simply, Feodosia. Investigations of the killing of German prisoners of war in the Soviet Union became a matter of macabre routine for the War Crimes Bureau, but a few cases stood out because of the number of victims involved or the needless cruelty demonstrated. One such case was the December 1941 killing of some 160 German wounded who had been convalescing at a hospital in the city of Feodosia on the shore of the Black Sea. Part of the documentation compiled by the Bureau is found in Violations of the Laws of War by the Red Army, a report prepared in March 1942. A year later, in February 1943, according to numerous notes and references in the Bureau's files, a special dossier on Feodosia was completed. Unfortunately, this dossier appears to have been lost, but because transcripts of the depositions and copies of the reports do survive in other record groups, it is possible to reconstruct the events and compare numerous corroborating accounts from both German and Soviet witnesses. Feodosia, a port town on the Crimean Peninsula, was captured by the German 46th and 170th Infantry Divisions on 3rd November 1941. A few weeks later, however, Field Marshal Erich von Manstein, Commander-in-Chief of the 11th Army, withdrew most of the German forces in order to concentrate on the attack on Sevastopol, leaving behind only a minimum of troops, and of course, the wounded and incapacitated. On 29th December 1941, following maritime bombardment by the Soviet Black Sea Fleet, the town was overrun by Soviet forces, and the remainder of the German 46th Infantry Division was hurriedly evacuated. The fate of the 160 wounded Germans in Feodosia hospitals was learned only gradually. On 3rd January 1942, two German soldiers were interrogated about their knowledge of the Feodosia events. Corporal Heinz Spletzrosser could give only hearsay information from, quote, a comrade from Coast Artillery, unquote. Spletzrosser said, on the afternoon of 29 December 1941, he had observed that a Soviet truck full of wounded soldiers stopped outside the field hospital. Shortly thereafter, he saw that wounded German soldiers were thrown out of the windows of the hospital by the Russian soldiers. Radio operator Georg Radke, who like Splitstrasser was not an eyewitness, reported that a German soldier who had succeeded in escaping from Feodosia had allegedly seen the corpses of many German soldiers outside the Feodosia Field Hospital. The order of the day issued by the High Command of the German 11th Army on 14th January 1942 based itself on these and other reports. Quote, the wounded and sick were evacuated from Feodosia with the exception of those who were not in a condition to be transported. With them remained a medical doctor and six medical assistants of the 715th Medical Corps. We must be prepared to learn of their heroic death, unquote. Although the 11th Army failed to take Sevastopol in December 1941 or even January 1942, in parentheses, Sevastopol did not surrender until 1st July 1942, German forces were able to push back into the Kerch Peninsula and to recapture Feodosia on 18 January 1942. There, soldiers of the 105th Infantry Regiment found the corpses of the wounded soldiers who had been left behind. Most of them lay at the bottom of an embankment, having apparently been thrown down from a wall several meters high. Others were buried or lay scattered on the frozen Black Sea beach, where evidently some of the wounded had been carried and left to freeze to death. The scene of these bodies covered with a sheet of ice was photographed by German army cameramen and sent to the War Crimes Bureau as documentation. The German army judges in the area were so shocked that they proceeded to take the sworn testimony of witnesses without waiting for a specific request from the Bureau. On 25th January 1942, Judge Heinrich Fuchs obtained the deposition of a civilian Russian doctor, Yuri Dmitriyu. Soviet Marines, he said, were the first to arrive, quote, later followed by infantrymen. The Marines moved about the town in a state of complete drunkenness. Already on the first day they came to the hospital across from the palace and shot the German wounded convalescing there, some 30 to 35 German soldiers. On the third day, that is, on 1st January 1942, a general order was issued that all Germans found in the liquidated areas were to be liquidated. The commissars and NKVD officials entrusted this task to special details, who then went to other hospitals. There were about 60 wounded Germans in the city hospital, 25 in the palace hospital, and 30 to 40 in the technical building. In all, I estimate that about 160 Germans were executed during the period when Feodosia was reoccupied by the Russians, unquote. On 30th January 1942, Judge Fuchs took the deposition of a Crimean laborer, Konstantin Bursud, who had been employed as a male nurse. He said, quote, I first hid in a cellar, since I feared that the Russians would shoot me as they shot all other Crimeans who had cooperated with the Germans. I could observe very little from my hiding place. On the first day of the Russian landing, I saw primarily a special group of Red Navy Marines who were finishing off about a dozen German wounded with axes and bayonets. This was at the square behind the hospital. I can further report that the Marines went about congratulating themselves on having thrown German wounded out of the windows of the hospital and then pouring water on them so that they would freeze, unquote. Another German judge, Walter Wilhelm, took the deposition of a German lieutenant, Hans Friedrich Doring, on 31st January 1942, quote, the corpses of some 50 German soldiers lie in two large rooms of the former German hospital. Some of them still have their red hospital tags. On some, you can see that a leg was amputated. All the bodies are horribly mutilated. Immediately outside the hospital, to the right of the main entrance, there is a niche in the wall, and there lie the corpses of a number of German soldiers, some of them naked, others wearing only a shirt. The corpses are precisely next to each other in rows, covered by a sheet of ice. Evidently, the wounded soldiers were first carried there and then drenched with water so that they froze to death. On this group of corpses, there were no mutilations like those mentioned above, unquote. Judge Gunther Jahn took the deposition of a German doctor who had been evacuated from the Feodosia Hospital and had returned 3 weeks later. On 2 February, 1942, Dr. Rudolf Burkhardt testified, quote, this is a long testimony. I had heard that there was a big mound on the beach. I went there and saw a hand in a splint sticking out. Accordingly, I ordered that the mound be opened. After removing a few inches of sand, we discovered layers of corpses piled up underneath. According to what we had heard from the Crimean population, there should have been about 55 bodies. And this turned out to be the case. The next day I had the bodies taken out of the mound, and I was able to establish that these were the bodies of the seriously wounded from my hospital. I was able to identify a number of the bodies by their combat injuries. Most of the corpses still had splints or plaster dressings. I was not able to establish whether the wounded soldiers had been exposed to water while they were still alive, since the condition of quote, wash skin, unquote, may also occur if a fresh corpse is drenched in water. I did conclude that the wounded soldiers had been brought out on the beach while they were still alive, since upon examination, I could determine first, second, and third degree frost injuries on the uncovered parts of the body, which were most exposed to the cold. Frost injuries of this type do not occur on corpses. The plaster dressings were broken in some cases, and blood and pus had issued from the cracks. Again, my conclusion was that the wounded were still alive when their splints were broken. About 50 meters from the mound, I saw a corpse partly covered with sand that had blown over it. 10 meters farther, I saw another corpse, this one enveloped in a sheet of ice because the surf had broken over it. In a Russian cemetery, the bodies of more than 100 German soldiers were found, which were taken to a house where I examined them. Among them were about 60 who had been treated for combat injuries, as evidenced by the splints and dressings. Clear signs on these 100 corpses justify the conclusion that the men were killed by blows with blunt instruments, unquote. Still a fourth German judge, Friedrich Lungwitz, took the deposition of a Russian male nurse, Asan Kalafatov, who had worked in the German hospital in Feodosia. On 14 February 1942, he testified, quote, right after the sailors and officers arrived, two of the Russian members of the hospital personnel were shot because they had treated the German wounded. I myself and two other nurses fled immediately. On 7 January 1942, the three of us walked back to the Via Stamboli. None of the wounded were still in the cellar where they had been accommodated because of the bombardment of the town. We found them in another empty room in the cellar. They had been shot, unquote. The testimony of several witnesses makes it apparent that an order was issued to kill every single German in Feodosia, whether wounded or not. On 24 January 1942, Gottfried Hagemann, a fifth German judge on special assignment with the High Command of the 11th Army, took the deposition of Corporal Anton Niedermayer, the cook of an ambulance section, who had been captured by the Soviets on 29 December 1941 and scheduled for execution on 16 January 1942. Quote, a Russian wearing a blue uniform, evidently a commissar, came up to me, put his pistol on my neck. I felt a heavy blow and lost consciousness, but only for a brief while. Upon regaining consciousness, I heard several shots fired in the cell above. On 18 January in the early morning, civilians came and brought us water to drink. Shortly thereafter, German troops came to our rescue, unquote. Corporal Wilhelm Torber testified similarly before a sixth German judge, A. Diederichs, on 24th January 1942. Quote, during 16 January 1942, we noticed while looking out the window of our prison cell that there was a certain anxiety among the Russians in the street. About an hour later, the prisoners were taken out of the cells one by one. I was one of the last, and they made me descend to the cellar. I was shot from behind with a pistol, and the bullet entered in the right side of the nape of the neck and came out through my right cheek. At first I was unconscious, but I came back after a few seconds. After me, another soldier was brought down to the cellar, and they did the same to him. Of the 40 to 50 German prisoners who had been there, only 8 men remained alive. Unquote. The Bureau's files contain further depositions taken at later dates when witnesses who were advancing or retreating with the troops could be located. On 24th May 1942, Lieutenant Bernhard Balitzhofer reported on the execution of 15 German prisoners of war. Much later still, on 8 November 1943, Corporal Carl Ewan described the corpses of 5 German soldiers whose, quote, faces could no longer be identified since they were swollen. I suspect that some of them were mutilated on the face, unquote. Non-commissioned officer Heinz Wippich, who spoke Russian, was told by civilians that, quote, the German wounded were thrown out of the windows of the second floor of the building and that cold water was poured on them so that they froze to death, unquote. Altogether, depositions of at least 12 witnesses were taken by 7 judges. Many persons mentioned in the documents shortly thereafter fell in combat or died after the war. But nearly 4 decades later, 3 of the examining judges, 2 important witnesses, and the photographer who took most of the pictures all remembered the events and confirmed the content of the Bureau's protocols. On 12th March 1976, Walter Hackel provided copies of a dozen Feodosia photographs and the following statement. Quote, I was the photographer assigned to Infantry Regiment 105 under Colonel Mueller. 4 or 5 days after the beginning of the German counteroffensive, we arrived in the center of the town of Feodosia. Somehow, perhaps from the Russian civilian population, we learned that horrendous things had happened in the German hospital. The first thing we saw there was the senseless devastation, the totally ravaged rooms and equipment. Bottles and glasses with medicines were thrown about, trampled on the floor between overturned cupboards, chairs, beds, medical instruments, and bloody dressings. But where were the wounded? After a futile search, we met on the street a civilian who took us to the edge of the shore highway and pointed down to a long mound of sand. On our way down to the shore, an older couple approached us. They both spoke German, and they told us with tears in their eyes all that had occurred in that place. The seriously wounded and the amputees had been carried down to the edge of the street and then thrown down 6 or 8 meters to the shore, where 2 Russians beat their heads with iron clubs and finished them off. German soldiers and POWs with shovels arrived and proceeded to lay out the bodies. Some of the wounded had not been killed immediately, but instead carried to the beach and left to the surf so that the waves broke over them and they gradually froze to death. The senior doctor from the German hospital, who had treated the wounded before the evacuation, was able to identify them by name, one by one, unquote. During the Nuremberg trials, serious accusations lodged against the high command of the Wehrmacht included the ill treatment of the Russian civilian population in the Crimea. In this connection, the defense collected numerous affidavits from German officers concerning not only the treatment of civilians by the Germans, but also the treatment of German prisoners of war by the Red Army. On 2 July 1946, Lieutenant Colonel Herbert Geithner stated, Quote, after recapturing the town of Feodosia in mid-January 1942, the commander-in-chief of the 30th Army Corps, General Fretter Pico, gave the order to distribute bread to the famished civilian population, in parentheses, mostly old men, women, and children. He did this although he knew that his own troops were suffering from chronic lack of food and that he would have to order the killing of a number of horses for food. He did this also in spite of the fact that the Soviet army had killed the German wounded who had been left behind in the hospital by pouring water over them and leaving them to freeze to death. Unquote. 3 years later, in the Hamburg trial against Field Marshal Erich von Manstein, the defense made specific use of the Feodosia events since the victims had belonged to Manstein's troops. Among other things, the defense introduced as evidence the German Foreign Office White Book, titled Bolshevik War Crimes and Crimes Against Humanity, 1942, which includes several of the witness depositions cited above. That is the end of Chapter 17, titled Feodosia. I'll now go on to Chapter 18, Grishino. That is spelled G-R-I-S-C-H-I-N-O. The Feodosia killings were not unique in a war that piled horror upon horror. Many field hospitals were overrun, and countless wounded soldiers murdered. Grishino offers yet another example of how the War Crimes Bureau investigated a major complex step by step and how it used the documentation. In the night of 10th-11th February 1943, a Soviet armored division succeeded in breaking through the German lines and occupying the Grishino area to the northwest of Stalino. Stalino is what is today called Donetsk, an important industrial center in the Ukraine, and it is, of course, the main city in the area of eastern Ukraine that has been claimed by the pro-Russian so-called rebels. Grishino is a little northwest of there. A German counteroffensive recaptured the area on 18th February 1943. What they found was a massacre. A judicial commission set up to investigate the murders determined that Soviet soldiers had killed 596 prisoners of war, wounded soldiers, nurses, and female communications personnel. It broke down as 406 German soldiers, 58 members of the Todt organization, including a Danish citizen, 89 Italian soldiers, 9 Romanian soldiers, 4 Hungarian soldiers, 15 railroad and other officials, 7 German civilian workers, and 8 Ukrainian volunteers. The first intelligence reports of 18 February 1943, immediately after the recapture of Grishino, contained the unsworn statements of 3 German soldiers, a member of the Todt organization, and an Italian soldier. The Italian, Annecy Damaso, told the German intelligence officer, quote, on 18 February 1943, in the early morning hours, I noticed that small groups of prisoners were taken from the room next to mine and that they were taken down to the cellar and then shot. They forced us into another room and then started shooting wildly into the room with machine guns and pistols. They also threw hand grenades at us. From the start, I had thrown myself to the floor and kept low throughout, and thus I was not wounded. Unquote. Franz Grabitz, a technician, had been captured on 11 February 1943 and avoided being immediately shot by claiming to be an ethnic Pole. But as the German counteroffensive became stronger, the Soviets decided to liquidate all prisoners of war. Quote, when our group of 7 came down to the cellar, we saw there the bodies of the 20 men who had been picked up before us. Since I was the first one of our group to enter the cellar, I saw what was awaiting us and hid myself as well as I could in a corner behind the corpses. Then they started shooting with machine guns and threw hand grenades into the cellar. Unquote. The first judicial investigations did not take place until several weeks later. On 18th March 1943, Judge Berthold Goebel took the deposition of Corporal Rudolf Pescher, whose supply column, unaware of the enemy in Gneshino, stopped there on 10th February 1943 on its way from Stelino to Dnipropetrovsk. Okay, this is the deposition of Corporal Rudolf Pescher. The crew of the tank came out and took us prisoner, since we had no way to defend ourselves against the tank's machine guns. Two guards took us out on the road, where, upon orders of the tank commander who came toward us, we had to stand in a semicircle. He asked whether anyone could speak Russian. When I answered that I knew Russian, I was ordered aside. Besides that, he asked the prisoners whether they were German. After I had been segregated, I heard him give the order in Russian, "Shoot them." Thereupon, several Russians raised their machine guns and shot into the group of prisoners. Actually, they did not particularly take aim at my comrades. After that, the commander came to me and asked whether I had seen what had been done with the prisoners and whether I was sorry for them. I said that I had seen it. He then wanted to know where I had learned Russian. I told him that I could speak Czech, which is related to Russian, and that in this way I was able to learn Russian. He then replied, "So you are really a Czechoslovak," which I confirmed, since I had seen what had happened to my comrade. While the tank commander was speaking with me, I saw that another group of comrades was shot, and a little while later, another group of 8 to 10 men were similarly executed. On the same day, toward evening, I was to go with an Italian and bring over the German vehicles. While I was doing this, I saw that still more Germans had been assembled, apparently denounced by the civilian population and taken out of their hiding places in the houses and cellars. After that, I only heard the sounds of shots being fired, and when I returned to the scene, I saw 12 to 14 corpses. Willy Knobloch, judge of the 333rd Infantry Division, took the depositions of 6 further witnesses. Sergeant Bruno Bronkowski testified, quote, "On 24th and 25th February 1943, Lieutenant Wusterach and I saw a courtyard in which 10 to 15 men of the Tot organization had been laid out in rank and file and executed. In the vicinity of the military cemetery, I saw in a house corpses piled up 1.5 meters high. They had been horribly mutilated. Outside a field hospital, I saw a great many bodies, wounded soldiers who evidently had been carried out of the hospital and left to freeze. In a house close by, I saw 7 or 8 dead women, Red Cross nurses, communications assistants, and girls dressed in brown and gold uniforms. Probably they were all raped by the Bolsheviks, since they were lying on their backs with their legs spread wide." Unquote. Judge Knobloch, who had entered Gneshino immediately after the town's recapture, inspected the bodies himself. Quote, "In a house I saw women with their legs spread apart. Judging by the uniforms, they had been Red Cross nurses. Some of the bodies manifested mutilations. The attackers apparently tried to cut off their breasts." Unquote. A more senior judge, Adolf Bloch, remembers that after the 7th Armored Division recaptured the town, it was discovered that, quote, "the Russians had killed every single German they had found there. In the hospital, the nurses had first been raped and then murdered. I was immediately sent there and was able to see with my own eyes what had happened. A nurse had a broomstick rammed between her legs. Some 120 Germans had been crowded into a storage room in the cellar of the train station and then mowed down with a machine gun. 2 men survived the massacre and their depositions were obtained. Both of them belonged to a construction company of the Tot organization. One was a Frenchman and was spared because of that. The other, a German, also claimed to be a Frenchman, and that is why he survived. As far as I can remember, the judge of the 7th Armored Division investigated this case and added photographic evidence." Unquote. I want to add here, as Carolyn, that the people doing these kind of things I would call subhuman. I don't see any reason why not to call them subhuman. What do we consider human? Do we have a meaning for human? Is it just a body with certain genetics who breathes and walks around and has a certain brain capacity? You know, these kind of atrocities and this kind of bestial behavior is truly, it's not even bestial because beasts don't particularly do things like this that I know of, but this is a different kind of an animal, a different kind of a human being anyway. And I don't think there should be any excuses made for them. Excuses such as, well, they were so angry and their country had been invaded and they were going to lose their freedom. What freedom did they ever have anyway? They didn't have any freedom. So I say Hitler was right in his directions to his military in the East that this was a different kind of war and that they should not have the same respect for the other side that they did on the West. I think he was proved to be right. So continuing on, Judge Gerhard Wulle, who was attached to the commander-in-chief of the 1st Armored Army, carried out investigations in the area of Yekaterinovka near Grishino. Among witnesses from the local Ukrainian population were two women whose depositions were taken by an ad hoc judicial officer, a Major Wilhelm. On 6 April 1943, Maria Martemyanova testified, quote, I clearly saw the events from a distance of about 100 meters. Out of the open truck, some 25 persons came down. Some children told me that they were German soldiers. Meanwhile, they had sat down and were in the process of taking off their shoes and their uniforms, which took about 20 minutes. I did not hear any orders. The naked soldiers then stood in a line and suddenly many shots were fired at the soldiers, I think from behind. All Red Army soldiers present participated in the shooting. Unquote. Henya Sakurakina, a neighbor of Mrs. Martemyanova, stated that she was a Baptist, that she too had seen the truck arrive and the soldiers take off their clothes, but when she realized that they were going to be executed, she ran into the house because she did not want to see the killings. Unquote. The War Crime Bureau's efforts to find additional witnesses of the Grishino events were pursued over many months. Judge Knobloch recalls that, quote, there was a specific request addressed to the court at Army headquarters, which passed it down to the division courts. That is, not only to me, but also to other division judges. The request named the witnesses from whom we were to obtain depositions, unquote. Among them was Corporal Carl Thomas, who had been wounded and sent to a Berlin hospital, where he gave a sworn statement to Bureau member Martin Heinemann. He remembered seeing the corpses of three Red Cross nurses. One had the skull split open, and another had knife cuts in the upper part of the body, unquote. On the basis of the evidence it was able to compile, in July 1943, the Bureau prepared a 24-page report with photographs titled The Grishino Case, but the available records do not indicate how widely it was distributed. In any event, the Bureau continued to collect material about the case. More than a year later, on 18 June 1944, Friedrich Schaumann took the sworn deposition of Sergeant Wilhelm Asche. Quote, when I arrived at the northern exit of the town of Grishino, I saw there, lying on the road, the corpses of 10 German soldiers. They wore only pants, and their identification tags were still around their necks. The skulls of the corpses had been flattened, apparently by blows with heavy instruments. The skulls had been reduced to about one-third of their usual breadth. Later, on the way from Grishino to Aniskaya, I saw hundreds of corpses of German soldiers piled up in the street. All corpses were naked. Almost all the bodies manifested mutilations. The nose and the ears had been cut off, many of them. Other bodies had their genital organs amputated and stuck in their mouths. Unquote. Hundreds of them, he said. It is impossible to know how many more depositions the original files contained. As it did for Feodosia, the Bureau removed the original files from the general files and opened a special dossier on Grishino and all the special dossiers called Sondermappen or Sonderhefte have been lost. I repeat that, all the special dossiers on these very bad cases have been lost. Lost. I wonder how they got lost. Continuing, like Feodosia II, the Grishino massacre was mentioned by the defense in the war crimes trial against Field Marshal von Manstein, though it apparently did not have access to the Bureau's documentation. Of course not. Instead, it introduced into evidence a long affidavit by one Carl Bender, dated 7 October 1949, which complements and confirms the Bureau's findings. That's the end of the chapter on Grishino. And I just want to comment here that you see they didn't give them access to the War Crimes Bureau material of the defense for the Germans in the war crimes trials. So they had to use a testimony by one man when there were actually many people who had testified to these things. This is how they were so unfairly treated at these war crimes trials and unable to put up a proper defense, which would have blown everything out of the water if they had been able to. I will now read chapter 19, Soviet Crimes Against Non-Germans. And this one starts out with a subheading, Non-German Axis Soldiers. Although the War Crimes Bureau was primarily concerned with cases in which the victims were German soldiers, it did expand its field of activity in the course of the war to investigate several major crime complexes involving other members of the Axis armed forces. A typical example is the deposition of the Spanish soldier, Amadeo Casanova, taken on 19 March 1942 by Bureau member Lothar Schirner in a military hospital in Frankfurt under Oder. Casanova, a member of the so-called Blue Division, which was composed of Spanish volunteers, stated under oath, quote, "In December 1941, my company manned a defense post together with German troops north of Novgorod. In the early morning hours of 27 December 1941, the Russians attacked us and encircled the Spanish company. Around 6 a.m., we undertook a counteroffensive in order to break the ring and succeeded in taking a village in the vicinity. A Spanish lieutenant and four Spanish soldiers who had gone ahead of us were wounded and fell into the hands of the Russians. Shortly thereafter, we found them dead. In all five cases, the Russians had nailed their heads to the ground with pickaxes," unquote. I think they do things especially bad to non-Germans because they want to send the message, don't help the Germans or you'll be sorry. Another Spanish soldier, Manuel Ruiz, told his story before Judge Schirner the same day. He said, "After Christmas 1941, the 1st Company of the Spanish Division was attacked by the Russians at its middle section, just north of Novgorod. Many wounded Spanish soldiers were captured. Some hours later, another Spanish company was able to reoccupy the area, and I personally saw the bodies of Spanish comrades who had been murdered by the Russians. Three of them had been pierced with a pickaxe through the chest. Another had had the ears cut off. Another was missing an arm. And still another had the genital organ amputated." Toward the end of December 1941, after the events described above, I saw a Red Cross ambulance standing on a road. Five wounded German soldiers who had been in the ambulance were lying on the ground. All five had been killed with bayonets or knives, and two of them had had their genitals cut off," unquote. Italian soldiers who fell into the hands of the Red Army also fared as badly as the Germans. The Bureau's files contain a considerable number of depositions in which Italian soldiers describe the killing and torturing especially of wounded soldiers left on the field and later found murdered. Italians who were captured without being wounded were frequently interrogated, in parentheses, when Italian interpreters were available, and routinely shot afterward. Of the 596 Axis prisoners of war and hospital staff summarily liquidated by the Soviet Army in Grishino, 89 were Italians. At the end of World War II, the new Italian government established that 84,000 Italian soldiers, presumed prisoners of war, were still unaccounted for. Their fate has remained unclear, and Italian requests to the Soviet Union for their return or for clarification as to where and when they died have been unsuccessful. Official Soviet history has claimed that many of the missing died in battle, and that others who, after the fall of Mussolini in 1943, refused to continue fighting on the side of the Germans were actually executed by the Germans. This is a dirty rumor. That's not true. This allegation has been periodically repeated by the Soviet press, most recently by TASS in January 1987, which claims that 2,000 Italian POWs were massacred by the Germans in August and September 1943 in Lvov. They were purportedly members of the Italian Retrovo Division, spelled R-E-T-R-O-V-O, including Generals Enrico Mangiani, Alfredo Fornaroli, and Giuseppe Giannotti. Investigations carried out by the Italian Ministry of Defense, however, indicate that there has never been a Retrovo division, that in August and September 1943, there were only a few dozen Italian soldiers in the Lvov area, that they all returned to Italy, and that the generals named by TASS cannot be found on the lists of Italian officers. In other words, a total lie by the Soviets, which is nothing unusual whatsoever. Continuing, it is noteworthy that the Soviet prosecution at Nuremberg did not include among its accusations the massacre of Italian prisoners of war at Lvov. Moreover, the relevant German war diaries and records of the High Command of the Wehrmacht do not indicate that such a massacre could have been perpetrated by the Germans. Most Russian and Ukrainian volunteers who fought in German uniforms and fell into the hands of the Red Army were summarily shot, as abundantly documented in the Bureau's files. For instance, on 28 November 1943, the counterintelligence section of the High Command of Army Group A reported the statement of a Soviet prisoner of war. Quote, on 8 August 1943, the 42nd Gwardzhskaya Baklanow of the 13th Gwardzhskaya Armored Division of the 5th Army executed 165 German prisoners of war and 125 Russian volunteers. The place of the shooting and of the mass grave may be seen on the attached map. The Germans, after their interrogation, came out of the shack in groups of up to 8 men and were immediately shot. The commander was Lieutenant Colonel Kotelnik. The executioners were all drunk and shot wildly with machine guns, so that not all of the Germans were killed immediately. 2 hours later, a lieutenant and 5 of his men laughed when they saw that several of the soldiers were still alive. These seriously wounded men were then brutally finished off. Unquote. This is the statement of a Soviet prisoner of war. On 28 November 1943, Sergeant Kurt Kretschmer gave a deposition to Judge Wolfgang Schuermann in which he described another massacre. Quote, when we came to the bodies of the executed soldiers, we discovered that a number of them were Germans and the rest volunteers. The German soldiers had been shot with machine guns. The volunteers had been beaten to death. Unquote. In April 1944, Corporal Joseph Kuhn, who had escaped from Russian activity and was convalescing at the military hospital in Troppau, reported that the Russian volunteers captured with him were first interrogated, then beaten and executed. This next section is headed Ukrainian and Baltic Civilians. German military judges investigated reports of violations of the laws of war committed against civilians as well as soldiers. They investigated German civilians in Poland in 1939, Belgian and Dutch civilians in 1940, and Baltic, Polish, and Ukrainian civilians from 1941 on. The introduction to the first of the Bureau's three volumes of selected cases on Soviet war crimes and crimes against humanity reads in part, quote, "Documents on Russian atrocities against Ukrainian, Polish, Latvian, and other minorities within the population of the Soviet Republic in the first months of the war have been included, together with the evidence of war crimes committed against members of the German armed forces. These documents, particularly those concerning the brutal murder of countless women and children, also illustrate the intentional and systematic character of the war conduct of the Soviet Army and thus provide an important addition and confirmation of other evidence contained in this volume concerning war crimes against German soldiers." Unquote. The Bureau's files document by abundant examples the existence of a general Soviet policy to liquidate all political prisoners in the Ukraine and in the Baltic states, rather than allow them to be liberated by the German army. In the first days following Hitler's attack on the Soviet Union, large-scale liquidations took place in all NKVD prisons close to the front. Not only political prisoners, but priests and other religious leaders and a few German prisoners of war, mostly air crews captured after emergency landings, were killed. On 24th June 1941, now think, this is just 2 days. This is just 2 days after the beginning of the invasion. Some 500 political detainees were executed in Dubno, D-U-B-N-O. On 26th June, shortly before German troops occupied the town, the Ukrainian population had stormed the NKVD prison, but most of the detainees had already been executed. Only a few wounded prisoners could be freed. Not far away from Dubno, in a town called Luk, some 1,500 Ukrainian political detainees were liquidated in late June 1941. In the northern district of the town, four mutilated bodies of German pilots were discovered in the courtyard of the NKVD administration building. In another town called Sarny, several hundred Ukrainian men and women were executed prior to the German arrival. On 17th July 1941, Ukrainian witnesses Gregor Turko and Roman Kurshmir testified about the killing of several hundred Ukrainians in the Dobromil district. The bodies were subsequently found in the NKVD prison and in several mass graves. In Bobrovka, the mutilated corpses of 16 Ukrainians were found. In Zolkiv, the murders of 50 to 60 Ukrainians were reported. In Brezhne, 150 to 180 bodies were found in the NKVD prison and in the cellar of a house nearby the mutilated corpses of 12 more Ukrainian victims. In a smaller town located between Lvov and Tarnopol, the bodies of 80 Ukrainians, men, women, and children, and several mutilated corpses of German soldiers were found. In Rudki and Komarno, approximately 200 Ukrainian men, women, and children were murdered, and there were mass murders of Ukrainians in Sambor. Military judges tried to investigate as many cases as possible, but there were numerous difficulties. Ukrainian witnesses, of course, had to be interrogated in Ukrainian. Moreover, because the German judges had to move on with the advancing German troops, they did not always have time to question all available witnesses. Still, an effort was made. The Bureau's files include, for instance, depositions taken in Tarnopol concerning the killing of some 200 Ukrainian civilians and 10 German prisoners of war. Mass liquidations took place throughout the Baltic states as well. On 25th June 1941, a Soviet armored vehicle arrived at an NKVD concentration camp near Kovno, in which some 450 Lithuanians were being detained. All civilian internees were forced to come out into the courtyard, including the Lithuanian guards, where they were mowed down by machine gun fire. The Bureau obtained depositions from the survivors, in particular from a Dr. Garmus from Kovno, and numerous photographs of the massacred corpses are preserved in its files. A similar event was described by the liaison officer of the German Foreign Office at the High Command of the 16th Army. Quote, "I have just visited the former concentration camp near Pravieniski, where the Soviets murdered some 200 Lithuanians on 25th June 1941. When the German formations advanced into Kovno on 24th June, the commissioner and five other Soviets fled. On 25th June, however, the commissar returned in the company of Soviet troops. Around 3 in the afternoon, the internees were forced out of their barracks to a place by the wire entanglement and there shot down with machine guns. Only a few of the internees survived and could report on the killings." Unquote. On 29th June 1941, in the town of Shaulan, Lithuania, 72 male corpses were counted. Dr. Bruce carried out autopsies and identified a number of deliberate mutilations. Among the German officers who wrote about these massacres after the war is General Walter von Seydlitz. He was with the invasion of Lithuania in the summer of 1941 and was captured at Stalingrad in January 1943. After being held prisoner in the Soviet Union for more than 7 years, in July 1950 he was charged before a special Soviet court-martial in Moscow with war crimes during the first few days of the 1941 Lithuanian campaign. Seydlitz rejected the accusations and took advantage of the situation to tell the court what he had seen there. Quote, "Soviet authorities massacred the civilian internees of the concentration camp at Alexandrovno, where they had rounded up opponents after their occupation of Lithuania in 1940. After this experience at Alexandrovo, you should understand that some German soldiers did not always conduct themselves in a restrained fashion." Unquote. Well, this Seydlitz, you know, was a traitor who cooperated with the Soviets after he was captured, and he was a big deal there. You know, he wasn't treated like a POW. He was treated like a friend of the Soviet Union who was German and had been in the German army. So he did a lot of damage, but it's not surprising that Alfred de Zayas likes, and in this book, thinks well of him and speaks of him as someone who's a good German or a good international person, a good person. Anyway, continuing, Seydlitz had previously asked his Russian interpreter whether he knew of the Alexandrovo killings, and the Russian had replied, quote, "Yes, we had serious problems with the Lithuanian intelligentsia. This concentration camp was set up for them." Unquote. Seydlitz requested the Moscow tribunal to call his former military judge, Alfred Holsky, who was also a prisoner of war in the Soviet Union, but the court neither summoned Holsky nor obtained his written testimony, nor called any other witnesses for the defense. Still another Soviet concentration camp near the town of Gliboki was taken by the advancing Germans in July of 1941. Although the records of the War Crimes Bureau contain no depositions regarding the massacres there, Judge Hans-Georg Jeremias, who took many depositions in other cases which are still preserved in the files, described the Gliboki events on 19 August 1975. As division judge of the 14th Infantry Division, which in July 1941 was advancing northeast of Vilnius in the part of eastern Poland that had been occupied by the Russians in September of 1939, Jeremias had kept a personal diary. One entry reads, quote, 2 kilometers from the town of Gliboki, there is a Baroque monastery. It had been used by the Russians as a concentration camp for politically troublesome Poles. Annexed to the church were monastery cells, which the Russians used as prison cells for the detainees. The church had also been emptied and used for purposes of internment. In the courtyard of the church, a mass grave was found, into which the murdered Polish detainees had been thrown. They were piled up in several layers. Unquote. Jeremias adds, I still remember that on the upper layer of bodies I saw some who appeared to have been strangled and still had a cord around the neck. The Polish population was inspecting the piles of corpses, looking for family members. I cannot say exactly how many bodies were in the mass grave. I had the impression that the Russians had liquidated all the detainees so that they would not be liberated by the Germans. It was the pattern. The same liquidations were carried out in Lvov and many other places. Unquote. So that is the end of chapter 19. I think that any more comments from me are unnecessary. It all speaks for itself. The brutality of the Soviets is undisputed and really leaves one speechless. So next time, I will be reading chapter 20 about Lvov. It's fairly long, but it will be a little bit of a shorter session. And after that, I will go into Katyn. I want to thank you for following this series. I think it's more valuable even than I realized when I first decided to do it. I'm just very glad that I started it. I'm very happy about it. So this is Carolyn Yeager reading from The Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau, 1939 to 1945 by Alfred M. Desaias. And I should point out that this book was originally published in 1979 in German. And this English edition was first published 10 years later in 1989. So at that time, the Cold War was still going on. The Iron Curtain was still up. So that explains a few things that we read, that we find in this book that might seem a little different today. This is September 14th, 2015. See you next time.